Welcome, everyone. I will convene the Senate Committee on Rules, and we will start by opening a work session on House Bill 2505.
Madam Chair and members, House Bill 2505A expands the definition of independent expenditure to additionally require reporting for expenditures of $750 or more for a communication that refers to a clearly identified candidate or a political party when the communication is made within 30 days of a primary election or within 60 days of a general election. The committee held a public hearing on this measure on Monday, June 5th. There are no amendments. Fiscal paperwork indicates a minimal impact, and revenue paperwork indicates no impact associated with this measure.
Okay. Senator Beyer, do you have a motion?
Madam Chair, I would move House Bill 2505A to the Senate floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer has moved House Bill 2505A to the Senate floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection?
No, I'm on the bill. I probably have another against
it. So ordered. And Senator Boquist, would you like to carry?
I didn't get to make the motion, so why would I want to carry?
Because you're on the bill.
She was saving the big speech for you.
Don't be peevish.
Peevish. Is that the word of the day?
That's the
peevish.
Word of the day.
I used the wrong word earlier, didn't I?
I think you did.
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Extremely peevish. Senator Boquist will carry the bill.
That's right.
Since he is a chief sponsor.
I'm fine. Got it.
Proving that he's not peevish.
Correct.
Certainly not squeamish.
Okay. Now we will open a public hearing on House Bill 3253.
Madam Chair and members, House Bill 3253A expands the Commission for the Blind's responsibilities regarding vending facilities and other services provided at public buildings and properties. The measure establishes priority for the Commission's business enterprise program to operate vending machines, snack bars, micro markets, convenience stores, coffee and food carts for counties, towns, cities, villages, local governments, and municipalities. The measure establishes a fund for deposit for the proceeds from vending facilities and permits use of the monies as specified. Lastly, the measure becomes effective on the 91st day following adjournment, sign, die. There is one amendment being offered. The Dash 8 amendments make various technical and conforming changes to the proposed language. Additionally, the amendments specify the Commission is not liable for claims arising out of an agreement or subcontract between a vending facility and the manager or subcontractor. And further, the amendments grant preference for people who are blind to operate vending facilities in cafeterias and community colleges and provide an exemption for public universities. This fiscal paperwork indicates a minimal impact, and revenue paperwork indicates no impact associated with the underlying bill. We do not have paperwork for the amendments at this time.
Okay. Do we have a sign-up sheet? Okay. Eric Morris.
Am I the only one on the sheet?
No, we've got three more after you, but since you're from the commission, you can bring up whoever you like.
Oh, no, I'm good.
Oh.
Is that a representative?
Yes, we just had some stars walk in. Representative Hack. So now you have company at the podium. Okay, Representative Tack, thank you for coming.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee, so much for giving us the opportunity to present to you House Bill 3253.
Here comes another representative.
And I believe we have a Dash 8 amendment, and Representative Kenny Geyer is here. I'm so thankful because she knows a whole lot more about this than I do. I was asked to step in and help Representative Kenny Geyer and the Blind Commission and the blind vendors to work on a compromise on many, many levels. We've had several issues over the years between the commission and the vendors, and we spent countless numbers of hours, Representative Kenny Geyer and her staff, and the blind vendors and the commission on coming up with a resolution, and I think we've done that finally with House Bill 3253, made some great progress. So with that said, I'll just briefly touch a little bit on what we've done, and then I think Representative Kenny Geyer will kind of get more into the details of the bill. But the Commission for the Blind runs the Business Enterprise Program and is intended to provide remunerative employment for the blind Oregonians. The program comes from the Federal Randolph-Shepard Act, which was established in 1936. Oregon's program currently has 14 licensed managers that operate vending routes, cafeterias, and snack bars in the state and federal facilities. Recently, the commission and licensed managers have been involved in a legal battle over the ability to subcontract their vending facilities, which is a little bit about what I touched on with some of the issues that brought us all together to come to some compromise. The licensed managers have asked for clarity in the statute, growth in their program, and transparency from the commission. And that's what this bill is intended to do. So I just want to say that I appreciate again so much all the work that Representative Kenny Geyer has done and her staff, the commission, and all of the blind vendors and many other people that came together to come up with what is a great resolution and a way that we can move forward.
Okay, thank you. Representative Kenny Geyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Melissa Kenny Geyer from House District 46, parts of Southeast and Northeast Portland. And I am really delighted to have worked with Representative Hack on this bill, as well as the Commission on the Blind and the Blind Vendors. It's been a long process. I really want to give thanks to my staff person, Erica Hoover, who's in the back here and can answer some technical questions. She has really dove into this and talked for hours and hours and hours with national experts and the head of Rehabilitation Services Administration out of Department of Education in Washington, D.C. about how other programs are run. And so really want to thank her and point to her if there's some really technical questions that come up, as well as other people who are going to testify. So Representative Hack talked about why we're doing this. The program has really floundered for a long time. It's known as being one of the most contentious in the country, actually. And so this was really a deep dive into how do we set it back on track so that we can meet the original goals and the vision of the program, which is really to provide meaningful and remunerative employment for blind vendors and really expand beyond the 14 that we currently have across the state. And not only have blind vendors who are licensed and manage this, but have them really employ a lot more people. For instance, in Tennessee, there's 100 people involved, 100 managers. So we really have a big vision of how we can make this happen. So what House Bill 3253 does is, number one, it establishes priority for the Commission's Business Enterprise Program to operate vending facilities in counties, towns, cities, villages, local government, and municipalities to put more blind people to work. It clarifies the law to allow subcontracting. This is something that a lot of the legal fights have been over, with written approval by the commission. It increases transparency in a number of ways. The commission's business enterprise program will provide quarterly reports of assigned and unassigned vending to the BECC, which is the Business Enterprise Consumer Committee, which is a body that is elected by the blind vendors, and to the public. The commission's business enterprise program must provide quarterly set-aside financial reports to the governor's workforce policy advisor and to the BECC. So the set-aside is basically the commission. When they make a profit, there's a certain amount that is set aside, or it's a commission. We call it set-aside and not commission because it's confusing with the Commission on the Blind. So that amount of set-aside has to be reported quarterly. And then lastly, on transparency, the commission's business enterprise program must submit the annual performance report and any surveys done. Surveys meaning what are the facilities out there that could potentially have these vending to the legislature annually. So we want to make sure that we're really that the commission's business enterprise program is really doing the work it needs to do to survey all the potential properties where we could have these vending facilities. With active participations by managers of the BECC, the commission will provide a statement describing full-time responsibilities. So again, I want to really make sure that the intent here is not to just give out contracts to blind vendors, but to really have it be meaningful employment. And so they need to work together on what does meaningful employment and full-time employment, how is that defined? In the case of the death or incapacitation of a licensed manager, a spouse or domestic partner may operate the vending facility for up to 6 months or the end of a contract for the purpose of winding down the operations. And the bill requires the commission, with active participation of the BECC members, to determine set-aside amount and discounts for employing blind, disabled, and veteran employees and for selling healthy and or locally produced food. So what we put in for the first for the first 2 years, so the contracts begin January 1st, we actually put in the bill set aside amounts because we want to stabilize the system and not have any potential for ongoing fights about it. And then after they see how those set aside discounts work, they can change that afterwards. So right now, the set aside that is set by rule is 11%. So in the future, what will happen is they would get a possibility of getting two discount points, 2% off, if at least 50% of their food is healthy or locally grown, meaning in Oregon. 3% if it's at least 75% healthy or locally grown, and 4% if it's healthy or locally grown, 100% of it is healthy or locally grown. In addition to that, if they hire if a manager hires a blind employee, they will have an opportunity for two discount points or two percentage points, and any additional blind employee after that, 1%. If they hire someone who is disabled, which will include people who have addictions, or they hire a veteran, then they will get 1% off for the first employee and 0.5% off for after that. Additionally, in the bill, it says, since 11 is the base, for those who are continuing.
Get back from the mic.
Sorry, thank you. For those who are continuing to operate as they have, in other words, they contract out their whole deal, they are allowed to continue operating with their same contractors under the same conditions for another 2 years, but they would have to pay 4% more. So this is all, so it would be up to 15%. So the goal, really, what we're trying to do with the set-aside discount structure or payment structure is to really incentivize the kind of program that we'd like to see. And I think lastly, I just want to point on OLIS, there are a lot of support letters from national. It's got a lot of support from people here locally, but also nationally. The president of the American Council of the Blind nationally, but also the president of the American Council for the Blind of Oregon and the president of the National Federation of the Blind. So there are some technical amendments in the Dash 8. Do you want me to read through the technical amendments? Okay. I don't think there's very much that that I'll call out on the technical, except for I do want to clarify that this priority is only for vending services, like the carts, the vending machines, snack bars, things like that. But it is not priority for cafeterias. That's a much more complicated operation to run. And so it's going to remain as it is now, preference only. All things being equal, preference would go. Community colleges, as they are now, would remain a preference for all vending facilities, not just cafeterias. I think the clarification between the preference and priority in the bill is really important, and we have taken many, many stabs at it to make sure that it's clear because of the two recent court opinions that stated that Oregon's law is ambiguous. It would allow the commission in consultation with Oregon Health Authority to adopt rules defining healthy vending items. I also want to say for the record, again, in terms of clarity, there's been a few questions that have come up since our amendment came out, our last amendment, which we think is like 99 to 100% there, 99%. When state agencies, departments, or political divisions, subdivisions, construct new buildings, modify existing public buildings or facilities, or enter into a contract for products or services that are customarily provided by the Commission for the Blind, or otherwise seek to procure a service, that's in Section 10, Subsection 3, we want to clarify that when it says to procure a service, we're talking about vending facilities as defined in the bill. That's what it says throughout the entire bill, not just any service like an architectural service. So that's one thing that we want to make sure for the public record. We don't know that it needs another amendment to say that. Just want to say for the public record. And then OHSU also, because universities are exempt from this, there is some question about whether they're included as a public university. So I'll just read this for the record. OHSU has a concern about the public university ORS 352 exclusion that appears in the definition of public building on page 9 of the Dash 8 amendment. Despite the fact that the definition of public building does not include any university land, the specific public university ORS 352 extension puts OHSU in a vulnerable position because our statute is ORS 353. The 352 exclusion creates uncertainty as to whether our lease of public land, the Markham Hill campus, is included in the definition of public building. So we would like to clarify that the definition of public building does not apply to building of property that is leased to a public corporation created pursuant to ORS 353. If this was worth it to you to have us put in an amendment before you pass it out, we'd be happy to do that, but we're hoping the public record is enough.
Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Representative, just to be really clear, I heard what you said, but I want to be real clear.
Yeah.
The intent is to exclude all public universities, including OSHU.
Correct. Yeah.
All right. Welcome, Mr. Morris. Did you want a question before we move?
But those two, if I could.
Okay, yeah.
So,
because they probably have thoughts.
Is the definition clear on public buildings? So all public high schools, public elementary schools?
No, it specifically excludes K through 12.
Okay, that's what I thought. But I just wanted to make sure, and I just I like to have it on the record.
Thank you. Thank you for the question.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Morris.
Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Eric Morris. I am the director of the Business Enterprise Program at the Commission for the Blind. I'm just going to speak very briefly. The priority piece of this legislation is a big deal. It's a really big deal for the program. Tennessee was brought up, and the 100-plus vendors they have in Tennessee. Tennessee also has a very clear priority for the blind in Tennessee. It's one of those things here in Oregon. It's been argued about, it's a nice way to put it, for many decades. So I think establishing this in the legislation, it's the turning point for the entire program, and I can't reiterate that enough. It mirrors the federal language that's already in place, and I'm excited about it. It's daunting because there's a tremendous amount of work that goes along with it, but it's also super exciting because it's going to put a lot more Oregonians to work, a lot more blind Oregonians to work.
Other questions from the committee? I just had a question. You had some criteria there for serving healthy or locally grown food. Why are you bringing that issue into the issue of blind vendors?
Thank you for the question, Madam Chair. So some of you may remember I made an attempt at this about 4 years ago that didn't go very far because when I became aware that we were basically subsidizing on public property the vending machines, which don't pay rent, don't pay utilities, I was thinking, why do we not have healthy vending? And I took the initial position that some cities and counties have done, which is to say, oh, well, then we should just mandate 100% healthy. That did not go very far, and I'm thinking that Senator Roblin was a House member at the time, and you probably remember that. So this is not a mandate at all. It gives them additional discount points. In other words, they get to keep more of the money that they make. They give less set aside back to the Commission on the Blind if they meet certain criteria for having healthy food. And the idea behind that is, again, the public entities are in partnership with the Commission of the Blind. We are giving priority, we're giving a discount to them because we think it's really important that people who are blind and other people with disabilities have work opportunities. But we also have other goals here where we're trying to keep healthcare costs down of our PEB members, for instance, and for the public. And so to incentivize them to put to really have a quality program where they're doing more food that's either grown locally, because that was also a priority, grown in Oregon and help our economy, or to have healthy vending options, we just wanted to incentivize it through this, you know, because 11% is what they're paying now. So here's an opportunity to keep more money and have to set aside less if you have it if you're doing any of those things.
Other questions? Senator Roblin.
Thank you. So I guess my hope is that through incentives here, we are incentivizing the blind vendors to hire individuals themselves as opposed to subcontracting. And so we know that they need people who can go and check the vending machine and all that kind of stuff. But as the vendor, they can hire that person. They don't have to subcontract the whole thing, right, which happened a lot in the past.
Right.
So they had the license, they got the job, but then they went and subcontracted with somebody else to take care of the whole thing. I mean, that works, and sometimes the person where the vending is, the city or whatever, that works really well because they have a good relationship with the vendor as well as the subcontractor. But that doesn't really get to hiring people who are blind, or making that vendor more dependent on doing the things that it takes to run a business, which we hope all of them get to do. I mean, because the issue is about getting them real experiences and real jobs, so as opposed to the resources that are coming in from it. And so I'm hoping, as I look at this, that that is encouraged here by some of the percentage stuff and other things.
Chair and Senator Roblin, that was probably one of my biggest pushes, too, when I came in, was that do you want to be an employee or do you want to be a business owner? Because they are very different. And they want to be business owners. And so a lot of these incentives are based around being a true business owner, and that's to employ people. The subcontracting piece, we also incentivize them to say, if you do subcontract, we're going to incentivize you if your subcontracting company that you use for part of your vending also hires people with disabilities.
Okay.
So we also incentivize there. But we did have many conversations about being business owners and job creators, not just somebody that, and they really do want to do that. So I think a lot of really good things came from this.
Yeah, and I just want to reiterate what she said there, and that's a great question, and thank you, because every opportunity we have to clarify the intent of this on the record is really important. So there's a federal law that that says there are certain discounts or there are certain procurement priorities that go to companies that hire at least 7% of people of their employees with disabilities. And so that will be one of the things that I actually didn't touch upon going through all the bullets on the bill was a procurement process. So rather than have blind vendors procure with anyone, you know, it's unusual that in government that we just say you can have a procurement with anyone. We brought DAS into the conversation and talked about how do we have kind of a priority list of subcontracting vendors that you can use for this, so we make sure that DAS has an opportunity to look at, you know, what is the best practices and build incentives at that level as well. And that would be something, again, with active participation. This is something that comes out of the Randolph Shepherd Act on the national level. There is an expectation of active participation by the blind vendors as they work with the Commission on the Blind to come up with that list. So at every stage of this program development, it is really important that we have active participation. The final say gets done by the Commission of the Blind through their business enterprise program, but it's very important that the commission and the business enterprise program provide the data to make these decisions in a timely manner so that the blind vendors are really a part of developing the program. But again, I think just going back to subcontracting, one last time for the record, one of the big fights has been that the blind vendors wanted the ability to subcontract the whole thing, and some of them do that. And the Commission of the Blind was trying to move it toward an employment program where you're not allowed to subcontract at all. And right now, the statute is unclear. Some think that you're allowed to and some think you're not. And so both sides have wasted so much money fighting this out. And what this does is really put kind of a middle path. Yes, you're allowed to, with written permission, subcontract certain pieces out of it. But if we're really going to invest in this program, we want to make sure that the vision of it and all the incentives are to be the kind of quality employment program. Somebody who's blind can't drive, but they can hire somebody who's deaf to do that piece of it.
Sorry. One final question. I would hope, as time goes on, that we incentivize the commission itself to do a proactive survey, quality assurance kind of thing, where they're talking to the people who have these vendors and who are paying for them, whether it's the city or municipal government, to make sure that the quality of the program continues to be high. Because I know that there are vendors that really feel that that's really an important part to them, but we don't always do it. And sometimes we get municipalities and others that say, okay, they have it, it's theirs, and then they don't think about it anymore. And if you really want to grow a business, you've got to be thinking about your customers as often as you can, and therefore you need to survey customers and others to make sure you're providing the service that they want. And I think that's an important aspect of this whole thing. It doesn't have to be in the bill, but I just hope that the commission and others continue to look at ways in which we do that to make sure that these people feel really comfortable that they are offering the service that everybody wants, including themselves.
Madam Chair, Senator, I totally agree with that. Customer service focused is how I think of that, not only from the licensed blind managers, but from the agency itself, because we have those contracts with those customers, and you know it's important to keep those relations in place and keep people happy from a customer service perspective.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, now we'll have Randy Huff and Art Stevenson. Welcome to the committee.
You heard me first, huh? You're the chairman.
Okay, step back from the mic. You're too close.
All right. All right. Well, Madam Chair, committee members, good afternoon. Thank you for allowing me to be here and provide testimony. My name is Randy Hout, and I am a lifelong blind Oregon resident. I also serve as the elected committee chairperson for the Business Enterprise Consumer Committee, which is a federally mandated and state authorized public body, and we act as representatives who are elected by the body of the membership. So as Representative Kenny Geyer, and I am here in support of House Bill 3253, and as Representative Alyssa Kenny Geyer stated, there is a lot of support out there on OLIS. There's a lot of support both nationally and locally. This bill has passed through the House, as I recall, unanimously, and there's, again, a lot of support. And there's support from the blind vendors community as well. In 36, the Randall Shepherd Vending Stand Act was signed into law by our president, Roosevelt, I believe it was. And then in 54 and 74, it was amended again. And in 76, the Senate Committee on Labor and Public Welfare identified this program as the most significant, successful employment program that Congress has ever enacted. I can tell you across the land there's near 70% unemployment for people who are blind. Can you think about that? 70%. And when you find yourself in that situation, you really struggle for employment. So the Randall Shepherd Act for years and years and years has been a life changer for people. What I can tell you is across the land, the states that make it happen, states like Tennessee, we refer to Tennessee because Tennessee isn't too much different from Oregon as far as population and as far as installations that are allowed through this program. There are 115 licensed blind vendors making remunerative employment, running their own business, blind entrepreneurs out there making it happen, and they're paying back into that program as well. So as Representative Kenny Geyer said, we do pay 11% back into set-aside, and that goes to help fund our program. So in many ways, we're help funding our program. 115 blind persons working their businesses in Tennessee. Unfortunately, here in Oregon, only 14. There should be 50. There should be 70. And there can be that. Priority, like Director Morris said, priority is certainly the key. And the states that make it happen are those states that have priority. I also believe it's very important, the transparency component that was mentioned by Representative Kenny Geyer. So the Legislative Assembly and the Governor's Office knows how is the agency doing. Are they putting more blind to work? Are they being transparent and open and progressive? So that's another really big piece of this. The subcontracting piece, we've been at this about 2 years ago, and some of the members of this actual committee we've had discussions with. So we started trying to bring forward progressive legislation a couple of years ago, and with a lot of trial and tribulation, a lot of work, a lot of meetings, a lot of going back and forth, and Erica Hoover, the staff member, has been an integral part of that. She's reached out to Rehabilitation Services Administration and others trying to fine-tune this. I will say that the amendment I received today, I wasn't able to read it in its entirety, and being blind, I have to read it with voice activation, and it takes a little bit longer to process that. I didn't see any real glaring problems. There was a couple slight, maybe, language changes that we'd like to hopefully identify. But again, this bill is so exciting, and I just would really ask the committee to consider this and consider the impact that it can have on blind Oregonians, not only now but for years to come. And this is a bill that Oregonians can be proud of. So thank you for the time.
Thank you. Mr. Stevenson. Back from the mic.
Am I too close?
You're too close. There you go, right there.
Okay. Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Ferrioli, distinguished members of the Rules Committee. My name is Art Stevenson. I'm the Vice Chair of the Elected Committee. I'm also a member of the American Council of the Blind, co-chair of the Legislative Committee, and I've been an advocate for blind persons here in Oregon for over 30 years. When I learned that I was actually blind myself, I can tell you at that time I found out I had a progressive eye disease called retinitis pigmentosa. I had been married for about 4 years, had two lovely children, and I was suddenly confronted with the fact, how am I going to support my family? And I'm here today to tell you that, fortunate for me, I got to go back to college and get a couple of business degrees and get involved with the vending program here in Oregon. I tell you, this program is the most successful employment program for the blind in the United States of America. That's how important it is. And as Randy told you, we have a 70% unemployment rate. I'm a lucky, fortunate one. I'm one of the 3 out of the 10. And we have an opportunity here to change that in Oregon by making sure we develop more jobs for blind persons here in Oregon, like many other states have. Alluded, there's been problems with this program forever. In fact, 2 years ago, I sat in Senator Ferrioli's office very optimistic that we were going to write appropriate rules to administer the program and start putting more blind Oregonians in the program and to work. That did not happen. And that's why we're here today trying to push this key legislation to make opportunities for blind people. As Randy said, we just got the amendments today, and I would ask that you give us a couple days to look at it, because there was a couple things that jumped out at me that scared me, that we were going to not make the progress in this program like we should. The active participation and the agency actually establishing these facilities, if they're available, is very, very important. And one of the reasons they haven't been done is because the agency hasn't been proactive at doing that. Now, I'd like to say that the subcontracting, and Senator Roblin, you had some concerns about that. We've actually been trying to write complete and appropriate rules for the last 3 or 4 years, which would included a teaming partner relationship rather than just a subcontracting relationship. The blind community does believe that the blind licensed manager has to be involved in the operation and working with their teaming partner, but also taking advantages of being able to make more profit because of the quote-unquote largeness of their organization is a benefit to the blind license managers to get cheaper prices, better pricing for our consumers, and also provide better service. Because if blind persons hire one individual to be a driver, and that driver happens to become sick, and he has 4 or 5 locations that have to be serviced that day or in the next couple of days, you come up with a problem because there's nobody there to assist the blind license manager. And so, Senator Roblin, I understand your concerns. I believe a blind person should be engaged in their businesses, but they also need to have the flexibility to take advantage of a teaming partner like a Compass who has more employees that they can make sure the equipment gets repaired in a timely basis, that if they have somebody sick, they have others that can fill in, and a blind license manager in their small vending facility does not have those kind of things. And we want to make sure that our state and county and municipal get the very best service, but the blind person does have to be engaged, and the blind person does have to have the authority to dictate to their teaming partner, because that's what it really should be. And there's teaming partners all across the country where the blind license manager is fully engaged in the process. And so using a teaming partner, a subcontractor, is sometimes very, very beneficial. And a blind license manager makes those kind of decisions to make sure that he's providing the best service, but they also do have to be engaged in making sure that they are the person in charge of the day-to-day operations. And I can guarantee you, I service part of my route, and I have a subcontractor in part of my route. And my teaming partner doesn't do anything without my okay. When I call up my teaming partner and say, hey, we've got machines down, they're out there immediately fixing it. And they don't put products in the machine unless I okay it first. So a teaming partner relationship is just that. And the blind license manager is engaged, and so I want to assure you that when a blind license manager decides that they want to use a teaming partner, it's an actual business decision to maximize the profit and the service that we are providing to our customers. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Roblin.
I just want to thank you for that. I think that's exactly what I believe needs to happen. And I like the definition of teaming partner because I think that makes more sense than just saying subcontracting. So how we get that and how we continue to work on that, I would support you in any way I can, because I think that's really what I'm getting at. I think you oftentimes need that other person, but it needs to be a partnership, not just a one-sided relationship.
I agree with you 100%, Senator Roblin. In fact, we, the elected committee, which I'm the vice chair of, have been pushing for the agency to write teaming partner language so that there is no doubt that the blind license manager is in charge of the operation.
Can you step back from the mic a little bit?
Oh, I'm sorry, Senator.
Thank you.
I get excited because You know, I know so many blind people here in Oregon are unemployed, and we need to provide more opportunities for them so they can go to work. And like I said, this is the most successful program in the country, and we need to support it in any way we can because...
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator Rowland, if I could just say something real quick. The commitment has been made by Representative Alyssa Kinney-Geyer and Representative Jody Hack to support us and to champion us and to be there with us through the writing of rules. Okay. And so they have gone above and beyond, and without them we wouldn't be here. So we're just so appreciative of that and their assistance going forward. So
thank you. Other questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Holly Heiberg from Oregon Health Authority. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. I am Holly Heiberg. I'm the legislative coordinator for Public Health Division of the Oregon Health Authority. I will keep my comments short. You have my statement for the record. I really just wanted to highlight today an important partnership that's going on between the Commission and the Public Health Division. We're currently working together to provide healthier food to Oregon employees. The Commission for the Blind and the Public Health Division are currently undergoing a pilot project at the Barbara Roberts Human Services Building, HSB, where the Public Health Division staff are working closely with the business owner of the cafe to offer healthier food and beverage options. Since January, the HSB cafe has piloted several healthier options, and the sales data tell us that the new and healthier items are indeed selling. We look forward to finding out more as the pilot continues, and we are already operationalizing those aspects that are working in other cafes. We will have a report available this summer on the success of this project. In its amended form, House Bill 3253A expands the scope of the commission to determine vending and facilities operated not only by the state, but also by county, city, and other political subdivisions. The Public Health Division is committed to working with the Commission for the Blind to ensure that vending facilities are successful in implementing the changes outlined in this bill. We appreciate the committee addressing healthy vending in state buildings, and thank you for the opportunity to testify. Thanks.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Senator Farioli.
Yeah, could we have, please, some examples of the kind of menu changes toward healthier food that you're referring to?
Sure. I would actually like to submit those to you. I don't have those with me today, but I have personally eaten at the cafe and have seen an expansion of the salad bar items and healthier sandwiches and hot bar options. But I will provide that information to you.
Thank you. Other questions? Senator Roblin.
I don't know that you can ask this question, but in the Dash 8s, Alyssa Kinnegainer mentioned the idea that it covered the section of who was exempt as universities, public schools, and those. But in that particular section, it didn't include OHSU. Do you think that it's enough in conversations to just mention it for a public record, or do you think we need to actually put the statute that exempts them into the legislation? Or do you have any opinion about that?
I do not have an opinion.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure, because I want to make sure that it's clear, and maybe we can talk to Kinnegar's people to ask that question, because I just want to make sure that it's really clear, because I've been caught too many times when we had on the record, but the language was clear and distinct, and when it's clear and distinct, they use clear and distinct. So I just wanted to make sure.
If it goes to court, they look at the plain language, and that rules. Representative Kinnegar, quickly.
Okay, just quickly, thank you, Madam Chair. Alyssa Kinnegar, House District 46. The universities already are exempt now, so we weren't changing that at all. So, again, I just want to state for the record, they are exempt from any requirements in this.
Okay, but in the dash nines, it actually lists the particular statute that exempts them,
right?
Of which OHSU is not part of, and therefore it may exempt universities. I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just getting back to what Senator Beyer was talking about. It clearly does not exempt OHSU,
right?
Unless we put 253 in, as opposed.
So if there was any desire to tweak an amendment and make sure that that's clear, other than what we're doing here on written record, I'm certainly open to that.
I think that would have to be done.
Okay.
To move this bill. Thank you. Other questions from the committee? Thank you. Okay, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3235. And open a public hearing on House Bill 2873.
Madam Chair and members, House Bill 2873A requires the governing body of the County City Port School District, Union High School District, Community College District, or any other public corporation that places a local option tax measure or a general obligation bond measure on the ballot to submit information about the measure to the county elections officer, and further directs the county elections officer to file the information for publication on ORSTAR. There are no amendments being offered, and fiscal paperwork indicates a minimal impact, and revenue paperwork indicates no impact associated with this measure.
Okay, Lori Wimmer.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. For your record, Lori Wimmer, representing 44,000 members of the Oregon Education Association, here in support of House Bill 2873. We often act as supportive partners to school districts and to community colleges when they propose bond levies and local options to voters. And so we have much experience with the current system and with its pitfalls. We've observed that in the interest of good government, it makes sense for individuals and organizations to know in a timely fashion what measures may be brought to the ballot in any given election. At the state level, this is done by timely posting of initiatives from the point of circulation on through the Secretary of State's managed ORSTAR system. In Oregon's 36 counties, however, this is not the case. Though each has filing deadlines for municipal corporations and also requirements of public noticing via the news media, there is no centralized source to learn of all the measures that may come forward. Sometimes local news sources elect not to publish these notices, and frequently local entities make the final decision to go to the ballot after voters' pamphlet deadlines, so even this information channel is unreliable as a source of complete information for local ballot election proposals. So the consequence of this unreliable patchwork system are several. Parties interested in the outcome of a levy do not always know that a school district, community college, special district, or other entity has put a question on the ballot in time to engage. Campaigns for worthy causes may not have independent means to get the word out in an effective and timely way. Voters may be asked to vote on proposals that have not had enough public scrutiny because of insufficient information sharing. No filing timeline congruity exists across all counties that would help unearth the total picture of any given ballot in any given election cycle. So for all of these reasons, to aid transparency and meaningful voter participation, we think this bill will aid those issues by asking that ORSTAR track all local election proposals, just as it does all state initiatives. We hope to do that in as effective and least burdensome way possible, both for local taxing authorities and for county clerks, with whom the sponsors have worked both at the county clerk level and with the Secretary of State's office to make sure that we have a streamlined process. We support the amendments that were made on the House side to do that very work. We thank you for considering this idea to help further the public dialogue about issues important to our schools, to voters, and to the communities of Oregon. Thank you, and happy to take any questions you may have.
What is the pathway for this to get onto ORSTAR? They give it to the county clerks, and then the county clerks put it on ORSTAR? How does that work?
I think the let's see, in the amendments, they were, we've made it so that those who are bringing it bring forward the information, and then it's just transmitted to ORSTAR so they can receive. And that was part of what we did in the amendment process, working with both ends of that equation to make sure we make that least burdensome. We've been told that because the folks who are doing the ORSTAR system and maintaining it are there doing that work for state elections, that this would be just a part of their work, and that's why there's not a significant fiscal. There would be some need to spend some time to add this piece to their software programming, but after that, it's autopilot.
Okay. Senator Roblin.
Thank you. We had a bill just recently with community colleges trying to get in the voter's pamphlet. Because some counties do a voter's pamphlet, some don't, so we try to clarify that. I understand what we're trying to clarify here. Can I search ORSTAR and just say, I live in Coos County, what ballot measures are coming up, and they'd all show up, or do I have to know each one to check? I mean, I'm trying to figure out how does this look in ORSTAR if I'm trying to find out what I'm going to be voting on in 2 months. How would it be there? And number two, if I cross county boundaries, and I'm a community college, for example, do I have to get the same information to each of the county offices that I have people in? So my responsibility would be to get it to each of the ones in which there's part of my district. So some would have to get it to more places than others. Is that how this moves forward?
Madam Chair and Senator Roblin, my understanding, if you look at the front page of the ORSTAR, when you do any kind of search for, let's take a statewide ballot measure, which is what it handles now in addition to right. candidates and money and so on, you can do a search. They give you various different boxes you can check for which election year, which area, et cetera, et cetera. So I would imagine in the build that they would do that. I'm not an expert in that by any stretch of the imagination. Technologically challenged, my children would call me. But I believe that that would be the same pattern they would use here so that you could just check. And then up would come anything that would relate to that search query. As for the county clerks, any ballot measure for a school district or a community college that flops over more than one county line already when they are filing it, there's already a process for doing so, and I don't think this would add any more steps. That's the whole point for us, is that we wanted to make it as low impact as possible and still provide great transparency for anyone who needed it.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Close the public hearing on House Bill 2837. And
I think it's 2873.
Yeah. Where are we at
here? That too,
oh, you're right. Close the public hearing on 2873. We wouldn't want that to stay open in infinity. And committee, that completes our work for the day, so we are adjourned. Completes our work.